Hello, everyone. My name is Walker Stewart, and I'm alongside tonight the professor of pro wrestling, Chris Charlton. And for the first time in a long time, you are hearing an edition of the NJPW Official English Podcast. We are excited to bring it back. Chris, we've been talking about doing this for a while. We've had multiple attempts of doing this for a while. We had a run of it in the first night of New Japan Cup that we were supposed to have. A lot has happened to make this happen tonight, but we're finally here. I keep saying tonight. I'm pretty certain it's the morning time for you.
It's tonight somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, this is your
right where I am.
Surprised you haven't said we're live.
Well, that comes later on. We'll be live later on.
Yeah.
But thank you for watching the official or listening to the official NJPW English podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcast, YouTube, wherever it is that you're listening. Go out of your way to rate 5 stars. Leave a comment. You remember when you could rate 5 stars on YouTube, Chris?
I remember when there was no YouTube, which I don't think that you can.
Yeah, no, that was 2005. I was three, brother. I don't know.
Right.
All right. Well, first episode of the podcast in years since, September of 2020. It was a whole different world then. And
yeah, I think we can, we can just make this a complete relaunch and say that there was no. what happened, I used to run the NJPW English podcast, and we wanted to have different. The idea was we'll have a different guest every week, and then the pandemic happened. And what happened was, in actual fact, we stepped up doing that. So, everybody's at home, so I'm going to do Zoom calls with everybody. And then we went through everybody, and then there wasn't anybody to bounce off of, was the thing, Walker. And I know you're very bouncy.
Well, I mean, I've been bouncing all day, brother. I just got off a flight from Japan. Now we're recording. Haven't slept yet. It's been a good day. So,
I was bouncing on trampolines with my kids yesterday, and now I have a terrible neck. I'm walking like Ishii.
Oh, jeez.
All day.
That's rough, brother. Oh man.
I'm not a young man anymore. Well, okay, all right.
I mean, we got a couple things to get into today. We're post New Japan Cup 2025. We're now post Sakura Genesis 2025. You and I were both there. 6,640 of our closest allies in attendance on the evening in Ryogoku Sumo Hall. And I mean, God, so much to talk about coming out of this night, going into the next event that we're going to be having. That was April 5th. This is coming up April 11th, Chicago, Illinois. We're going to talk about it all today. But I wanted to kick off, we could go match by match, but I think I really want to hit some big points with you here. And it ironically does start in the first match that leads to two very significant moments later on in the event. And the whole night kicking off with Yuya Uemura and Sonata.
I really enjoyed that match. It was, it almost felt, sort of Sonata coming out in his John Lennon phase.
Yeah.
He might as well have been singing Imagine All the War Dogs, it's one of those where you have a match like that on the first match of the card, and you're like, well, I bet that plays into something down the road, for better or for worse. And for both guys, it played into something down the road. And I guess in hindsight, Sonata in pure white, it almost felt, do or die for him. In much the same way it was with Shota Umino, I guess, back in November. But I'm sure, he was wrestling more of the classic style that he used to wrestle, before he joined the War Dogs. And I just kind of feel like if Sonata had won that one, maybe he wouldn't have come out later on in the evening. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And having been, having wrestled Yuya Uemura, almost like you could see Uemura as a younger protege of Sonata's in an alternate universe, and wrestling that match and then losing, well, that sort of played into, it was like the beautiful swan song of classical, technician Sonata. I guess, or maybe he's going to be completely different in House of Torture.
Well, yeah, we're jumping the gun, but good Lord, there's a lot to get into when it comes to Sonata and House of Torture. We'll talk about that later on, the factional shift that we have seen. But hey, a very nice win for Uemura with the armbar. I pointing out in this, a very, very quick tap out of Sonata on that armbar.
And it was, Well, it was the same way, if I recall, that he beat Christopher Daniels. So that was his last match on Excursion in the US, was, you know, him beating Chris Daniels with that hold. Another thing where sort of these little things repeat. And then, you know, I mean, yeah, it sort of came up later in the night. Eventually, he's at some point soon, you know, I mean, we don't know. Maybe by the time people listen to this, maybe people do know. I'm not sure. But at some point, somewhere, somewhen, he and Yoda Tsuji are going to get into it. And I can't wait for that.
Yeah, that's going to be a really exciting one. You know, moving into the next match that we had, of course, El Fantasmo, Great O'Khan, the NJPW World Television title on the line. A very hot, very quick start for LP that in a lot of instances, I'd argue, would work to his advantage. And I think that the light kind of burnt out closer to the end. Of course, Great O'Khan, what was it, a TTD through the chairs on the outside. Mm. And not a pinfall, not a submission, but a count-out victory for Great O'Khan. He's a new World TV champion.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, these things, obviously, the difference in Japanese pro wrestling is that the title can change hands on a count-out. You know, and it was, we said it in the moment, it was great sort of situational awareness from Great O'Khan. Yeah, so you sort of saw those chairs being set up earlier on in the match, and then they got away from it. I'd completely forgotten about them. And Great O'Khan clearly hadn't and used those to his advantage. And there you have, I like the idea that, you know, the future that Great O'Khan could have as TV champion, you know, with what he was saying all through last year of as KOPW champion, well, I want to be everywhere where there isn't cameras. Now with the World TV title, he'll be everywhere where there is cameras.
Right.
But where Great O'Khan kind of goes with that TV title, I'm quite intrigued by. And albeit it being a shame, you know, for LP, you know, I enjoyed the open challenge aspect of the last couple of months. So, it'll be interesting to see what direction Fantasma goes. But Fantasma is going in an interesting direction for Chicago.
Right, yeah, going to be coming up with tag team action alongside Rocky Romero against LIJ's Naito and Titan. We'll talk about that as we get later on down the line. But, man, I really do have to feel for Fantasmo. And, you know, I'd like to ask the question to you, man. Like, do you think, you know, is there a world where if Fantasmo still has his eyes set on the television championship, he can look at an individual like O'Khan and appeal to whatever board and say, hey, I wasn't pinned, I wasn't submitted. Yes, I understand, you know, the legality of the situation, but I don't feel like I was truly defeated. I would like a one-on-one one more time.
Yeah, I think so. I think like he could easily make that claim and it would happen. Whether Fantasma will do that or not remains to be seen, of course. That certainly seems like it would to cast back a couple of champions ago, it would be something that Jeff Cobb would do.
Right.
You know, yeah. Whether Fantasma will do it or whether he sort of seeks a different way, you know, to move on, or whether, you know, he feels that, you know, a lot of people in New Japan Pro Wrestling tend to lose forward if they're able to take a loss on the chin and then bounce immediately back with a big win. So I think Chicago is going to be very important in that regard. You know, I mean, he's opposite a former world champion in Tetsuya Naito, you know, who's, and we'll get to Naito in a little bit, but like Naito looking to bounce back as well. So I think there's a lot more to that tag team match in Chicago than immediately meets the eye if you look at the card on paper.
One of the few matches that happened on the night that was not for a championship, but what you called something greater on the broadcast, that was a soul of Shota Umino. I'd love to get into this, pick this apart with you. Shota Umino, Hiroshi Tanahashi. I think this shocked a lot of people. Tanahashi has been on quite the run throughout the road to the final night of Tanahashi's career, suffering very few singles losses. There was that loss to Takagi back on April 2nd in Yamanashi, a win over Taguchi, you know, a few nights later, and then 24 hours after that, faces off against Umino. Umino with the win via second chapter.
Yeah, I think like there's, you get to sort of recency bias even more so in within a specific event. Because I think like we should say Sacrogenesis, I thought top to bottom was an excellent, excellent card. You know, I think like there was something to see in every single match, and every single match kind of offered something different to the table. And with the recency bias we have, you know, you come out of it talking about the main event very often. But that match with Shota Umino and Hiroshi Tanahashi, you know, I mean, if you said that was your favorite match on the night, yeah, you know, I would have a hard time arguing against that. And a lot of it down to it was a real match. I mean, the physicality was certainly like that what hit me, right? Specifically in terms of Shota Umino, right? And the physicality that maybe at times he had lacked, or at times even as he's made this transition to this sort of new version of himself, he was sort of trying to bring out that physicality bit by bit. And here we had like the culmination of all of that. And at the same time, we got a lot of sort of close up looks. And I think our camera people were great at picking that up, of like, you know, what's trying to convey what Shota Umino was thinking. And you got an awful lot of that match told with a story on Shota Umino's face. You know, I think it was really written in his sort of facial expressions. The drive, the anger he had, I think, you know, a lot of the frustrations. It would be something that Antonio Inoki used to say, like, what are you mad at? What are you angry at? Like, take that, bring it with you into the ring, you know. And I think like Shota Umino was wearing a lot of the frustrations over the last few months, and bringing them towards Hiroshi Tanahashi. He said, I'm gonna bottle all that up and unleash it on Tanahashi, and I think he did.
Well, you know, and I absolutely agree with you to an extent. Further than that, though, Chris, I feel like we haven't seen all of it unbottled in one matchup, so to speak. I think that was a lot out of Shota Umino, more out of Shota Umino than we might have seen in the past. But I think where you're really going to see a lot of those frustrations unbottled, pent up, and let out is going to be coming up in Chicago. To jump ahead a little bit, the IWGP World Heavyweight title on the line, Hirooki Goto, Shota Umino. That's going to be a match that is not only for the world title, but you have to feel Umino so set in his mind that like he is going to be the one that leads Hontai, and Hirooki Goto appointed that by Hiroshi Tanahashi himself.
Well, yeah, I mean, but yeah, it's whether Goto is the leader of Hontai by appointment or by position, by dint of being the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. You know, I think even if Tanahashi said to Shota Umino afterwards, run with it, Shota, young Shota, you are the guy, he wouldn't be the champion, right? And so, yeah, that's going to be absolutely key, absolutely critical. You know, I mean, I think to go back to those sort of facial expressions, you know, I mean, Umino sort of unleashes this pent-up aggression, comes away with a victory. He didn't crack a smile, you know, and he didn't crack a smile at the end of the night either. You know, very sort of, very stone-faced in terms of, well, I've done what I set out to do. This should be what it should be. But at the same time, you know, I mean, afterwards he did have like the little wristbands. He did go up to give one to one of the kids in the crowd. You know, so there was an element of maybe granting himself that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, having, you know, because it's interesting that he had those on his wrist the whole time. He didn't give that out during his entrance. You know, it was after he won the match, right? Like, I'm gonna give myself this, as opposed to giving it directly to that child in the crowd there. Maybe, you know, overthinking that, but that's all we all we kind of do. So it makes me wonder what, as much as there's so many sort of ins and outs and so many ways to dissect that main event in Chicago with Goto and Shota Umino. It's the post-match for me, for Shota, win or lose, that's really compelling, you know, because does winning sort of vindicate everything, right? Does that mean a full return to what I was, or is there more to do for Shota Umino in his own mind? Or, you know, I mean, if he loses, then what next? you know, after sort of setting yourself up, getting to a certain point and falling down again, you know, what happens next? I think that's definitely intriguing.
You know, as much as we talk about this being a results-driven sport, results-driven business, whatever the phrasing is you want to use, it almost, you know, kind of hitting on what you're talking about here, it feels as though with every single win, Shota has given himself a little bit more of a leeway of a reason, justifying fanfare toward himself. But nobody can deny Shota Umino when he's IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, if that comes to pass in Chicago. We'll talk about that more when we preview Windy City Riot. But moving on to the never open weight six-man tag team title match. I got to tell you, going into this one, you know, I had all the hope in the world Gabe Drilla and, God forbid, Taiji Ishimori even would walk away with a whole new set of gold. And as we always talk about, House of Torture with the numbers game, the numbers game, the numbers game. But it wasn't a number that anyone expected to come out of the War Dog side.
Well, the number would be the shoe size.
Oh, my God. Okay. Okay.
Like, I don't think anybody, I don't think the bury of the lead is, like it almost felt the old meme of, like, I wanted to say, what are those? That was wearing as he got into the ring. Sanada joins House of Torture. This is his fourth faction in a two-year span. And now it feels, you know, it was the ultimate of, I wouldn't even want to say can't beat him, join him. You know what I mean? Sanada was, of course, IWGP Tag Team Champion with Evil back in the day and Los Ingobernables de Pon. And when Evil left to join, you know, at first Bullet Club before it became House of Torture, Evil and Sanada wrestled many a times, and they wrestled in the Tokyo Dome. And Sanada, using his classical style of wrestling, beats Evil, and then using his classical style of wrestling becomes World Heavyweight Champion and beats Evil in Ryogoku in a lumberjack match. And so, and yet, you know, the you know, it's a collapse that needs to be studied, as the kids say, you know, of how the transformation over the course of 2024, completely breaking him down to the point where he can't see anybody else be happy. He can't see Taichi get success. So, you know, he interrupts him, runs in and joins War Dogs. He can't bear the idea of Yuya Uemura getting success, you know, in the opening match or whatever was what actually turned the page. Evil said, we've already been talking, you know. So, I mean, does that go back to the New Japan Cup then, you know, when he was made that sort of half-hearted interference on behalf of David Finlay? Perhaps so. It's an interesting one. And now, you know, the how Sanada fits into House of Torture is going to be intriguing to see. Sanada and Evil together again is going to be a sight to be seen. But, I mean, obviously, that's something that the War Dogs will not take kindly. And now we have, again, at some point in the undetermined future, it's all going to kick off in the Dog Pound Steel Cage, which is, you know, they're going to have to be prepared to bleed. I think War Dogs will be, but with a House of Torture eye or not.
You know, the first time that we ever saw a Dog Pound Steel Cage match, you and I both said at the end of that broadcast, that was an incredible spectacle that we hope to never see again. You know, we never wanted to witness that level of violence again. And yet, you know, as personal as things felt between War Dogs and United Empire at that time, you know, Will Ospreay leaving New Japan Pro Wrestling at that point in his career, it feels somehow even deeply more so at this point in the juncture. And for David Finlay to call upon that himself, you know, in this position, I'm very intrigued to see what levels, and if those levels go deeper than previous, the War Dogs and House of Torture are both willing to go to. As we move on to the next one, you know, the Never Open Weight Championship on the line, you know, keeping this one short and sweet, a tight 13-minute matchup, a historic fifth defense for Konosuke Takeshita of the Never Open Weight title. I thought Ryohei Ohyawa looked spectacular. It just wasn't his night.
Yeah, it was, you know, again, sort of further cementing that Ohyawa belongs to be in a top flight, and the never mix is the exact right mix for him. It's just that there's too much Konosuke Takeshita. You know, I mean, it seems like every time we see Takeshita, he's awesome, he's amazing, and even though his focus is divided, you know, I mean, three promotions and different countries, you know, I mean, he's just phenomenal every single time. You know, I liked the aspects of, you know, I mean, you saw the Jun Akiyama high knee, and then Oiwa responding right back with the Tenzan suplex. You know, it was like the 2003 G1 final in 2025. Yeah, and it was they matched up so perfectly. I'm sure it's not the last time we'll see them, but to put the pin in that and talk about the future, I mean, obviously Takeshita Friday night in Chicago with Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Right, and you know, the Ace versus Alpha, that match has been built up so much. There's so much history going deep into it, back to the Takeshita's roots of DDT. You know, we're going to talk about that as we get into Windy City Riot, but it is if you haven't seen the video package for that, by the way, folks, that is one of my favorite pieces of media that New Japan Pro Wrestling has produced when it comes to the video package side of things, and those are always pretty fire just generally. So yeah, you're going to want to check that out. As we move on to the IWGP Tag Team titles, quick and easy here. Callum Newman, Jeff Cobb, new tag team champions. Tendero was not the answer, and the question now becomes, well, what's next for Hiromu and Naito?
Yeah. Obviously, Naito, as we talked about Naito in terms of Chicago, Hiromu has Best of the Super Juniors on his horizon, you know, but that doesn't preclude him from going after tag team gold again, you know. So I mean, whether Hiromu and Naito, you know, whether that might be just it, and well, we won World Tag League, we won the tag team championships, they're satisfied with that, or whether they'll loop back and compete more, but we'll see. But in the meantime, yeah, Callum Newman, by a measure of 40 days, I believe is the count, is the youngest IWGP tag team champion in history, and beat, of all people, Nick Oldest to do that.
And moving into the IWGP Global Heavyweight Championship matchup, 22 minutes, Yota Tsuji, Evil, one-on-one, and it started with trickery, it ends with trickery. I mean, this is a rambunctious, confusing spectacle that we had in front of us.
You know, it's funny, like, as much as the build to this match was about Evil saying, "I've reformed, I've seen the light." And of course, you know, of course he hasn't. Of course he didn't. You know, it's in his nature to be the snake or be the scorpion or whatever. But when you see a House of Torture, and specifically an Evil title match, things go one of two ways, right? I think sometimes you have all of the interference and all of the hijinks and all of everything, and you know, it seems like good will prevail for a second, but then Evil and that damn Dick Togo get in the way, and you leave thinking that was the worst experience of my entire night. Or, as happened in Sakura Genesis, the good prevailing, and the powder go in the eyes of Togo, and the whiskey go in the eyes of Togo, and Yota Tsuji coming out on top. You come out of a match like that and you're punching the air saying, like, that's the best thing I've ever experienced. You know, things happen on a knife edge when House of Torture. It's only, you know, you feel in those matches. I think we left feeling pretty good about ourselves.
Right. And, you know, Yota Tsuji, no shortage of challengers for that global heavyweight title. And we saw the next one step up in the form of Yuya Uemura. Of course, a long-standing history between those two going back to their days as young lions. Of course, Tsuji forcing the shaving of the head for Uemura back in Sapporo last year in February. And that, you know, some people might have seen it as a setback. It definitely was at the time. But a complete, I mean, re-flourishing of Yuya Uemura in this portion of his career has led to the two meeting one more time, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those they'll be destined to do it forever, I think, you know, and you know, certainly with that, the history of the G1 match, that being where Uemura got hurt. So yeah, where and when we don't know, but yeah, I think it's definitely one that we're going to be seated, as again the kids say.
And finally, our main event of the evening, IWGP World Heavyweight title on the line. Hirooki Goto picks up another defense against New Japan Cup winner David Finlay, sub 25 minute. It took 3-1-2-3 Goto Revolutions to put Finlay down.
Yeah, I mean, it was as awesome as David Finlay is. Every time that Goto steps into the ring as a champion, he gets a little bit stronger. The belt shines a little bit brighter as well. And yeah, this was a vindication, of course, from, you know, 6 months ago. And it was such a great moment to see him celebrate with his family at ringside afterwards. It was an incredible effort from Finlay, but it was an incredible feel-good night at the end of it. And then I thought... Goto calling out Shota Umino, and in a sense, I guess we'll transition in Chicago now, but like the statement of, look, you know, we're not, New Japan Pro Wrestling is going to Chicago. And this is, you know, usually last couple of years, Wintrust Arena has been our set in the stall for the biggest night for New Japan Pro Wrestling in the US this year. And the best way to do that, the best way to show that New Japan Pro Wrestling is the best wrestling in the world, is to have two Japanese wrestlers not try to imitate, duplicate, or localize, but to show Japanese strong style pro wrestling. And that's it. You know, I mean, it's all steak, no sizzle, I think, on Friday is the way you look at that. And it's whatever your thoughts, your opinions on Goto or Umino or anywhere in between. Once the bell sounds, like, that's where all your attention is going to be, and it's going to be a phenomenal main event.
You know, Goto and Finlay was my, you know, wrestler of the year 1A and 1B competing against one another in the main event, and I think that was just a special matchup. I mean, if there's any match you go out of, you know, your entire week to catch, it should be that one. And truly, everything on this card, top to bottom, a wonderful Sakata Genesis. As we head into Chicago, we head into Wintrust Arena on April 11th. We have some great undercard action. Zane J, CJ Tino. Zane J been spending some time in the Noge Dojo. TJP taking on Tom Lawler for the second time in their career. But to hit on a little bit for future reference, the Strong Women's title number one contendership will be up for grabs. Mina Shirakawa, newest signee to All Elite Wrestling, taking on Stardom's Azumi.
Yeah, 1-0-1. So Azumi has beaten Shirakawa. Shirakawa has never beaten Azumi. And I think that all stems from the Tokyo Dome, right? Mina just coming short of Mercedes, and she'd want another shot at that. Azumi, meanwhile, coming up short of the IWGP Women's Championship in the Tokyo Dome. And she's wrestled Mercedes before, but only in a three-way, right? You know, a couple of years ago at Sakura Genesis. And like, if you remember that was supposed to be a singles match initially. And then, as happened, Hazuki jumped in and made it a three-way. Hazuki got a singles rematch by the end of Long Beach last year. That was one of the best matches of the year. Certainly women's matches of the year. I think one of the best matches at all last year in all of pro wrestling. I think whatever happens, it's going to be something to look out for. I tend to think, Azumi will be more driven in this match because she knows that it's going to be hard to get another crack at Monet, whereas Mina might think, well, we're working in the same office these days. You know, there might be another chance to catch up sooner than Azumi does. So I think the pressure is on Azumi rather than Shirakawa here.
A lot of great news coming out for Kevin Knight as of recent, signing with All Elite Wrestling. And, you know, the congratulations go out with Knight. Still going to be competing in Best of the Super Junior 32 this year, but has an opportunity to walk in as a champion. Knight and Kushida taking on world-class Wrecking Crew for the Strong Openweight Tag Titles.
Yeah, Kevin Knight said he's not necessarily going anywhere. And I think you're seeing this going straight into Best of the Super Juniors as well as Kushida is. You will see him divide his time between AEW and New Japan, I'm sure, in the future. You know, I mean, he's made an instant, incredible impression on the AEW audience, and I think he's going to carry that forward. But at the same time, he and Kushida haven't teamed for a hot minute here, and you're up against a world-class Wrecking Crew, which is a very cohesive team. If it was chalk pick, I would just about side with the champions over the challengers.
No man has ever beaten the other one in this one. Tomohiro Ishii, Gabe Kidd went to that 30-minute draw, so now it's 30 minutes back on the clock with sudden death at risk Iron Man match for the strong openweight title.
Yeah, so the question there is, it feels, not so much what's the scoreline going to be, but how deep are we going to be into overtime, right? Because it feels like neither one is going to get a result in that first 30 minutes. Or I don't know, do you think it's going to be, you're going to rack up a basketball-like scoreline? It doesn't feel like that in my book.
No, I see a sudden death situation, an overtime situation coming to play in this one. Who I see walking out on top, I honest to God couldn't tell you. Ishii and Gabe Kidd had very similar runs in New Japan Cup this year. That jury's out here for the strong openweight title. It's going to be great. That's that San Jose match was awesome.
I feel Gabe Kidd is going to be happy to be in this situation, because it's not the House of Torture, being screwed out of competition. This is just straight up, it's all it is. It's two guys, a bell's going to ring, they're going to beat the tar out of each other. And that suits Gabe fine, and it suits Ishii fine as well.
Rocky Romero and El Fantasmo taking on Tetsuya Naito and Titan, as well as Zack Sabre Jr. taking on David Finlay. That is a semifinal New Japan Cup rematch. But Chris, the next one I want to get into with you, the depths of it, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kinosuke Takeshita. Anything further to add than what we talked about earlier on?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, like that sensational video package that they put out on YouTube just recently really sort of tells the tale. And going back all the way to 2014 to now, I think there is those words from Konosuke Takeshita, way back when they were in DDT. Takeshita was sort of desperate, a little bit sort of under pressure, and came out with that line of, well, Tanahashi, you're one in a century and I'm one in 2 trillion years. And everybody laughed then, but nobody's laughing now. And at the same time, Tanahashi said back in the day, it hurts to put DDT and New Japan in the same conversation, kind of big leaguing the independents. For Takeshita to kind of say, well, now in 2025, you and I don't belong in the same conversation. I think those are very accurate statements. So, like Konosuke Takeshita, every time I see him, like, I'm blown away. But at the same time, even though what 1-2 in his last 3 matches, but Tanahashi, it feels, is wrestling a different way to how he has been in his peak, of course. But, I think he's putting the performances together, and he's on a hot streak, certainly in terms of the content of the matches, if not necessarily the results.
Chris, we're getting into our final moments here, so it's time to talk about it. The main event, IWGP World Heavyweight title on the line, Hirooki Goto, Shota Umino.
Yeah, who do you like, man? I mean, it's
a difficult one because, my heart, and admittedly, it's the Cinderella story, right? I mean, and Goto said it himself, it's not a Cinderella story anymore. It's just your reality to live in. Considering it what it was, for so long, we saw it as an impossible thing. Goto seemed like someone who was past the conversation for the heavyweight championship, and now that is far and away been proven that it is not the case. But Shota Umino has never been more locked in, as they say, has never been more focused as we have seen him. I really think that it could have gone either way in the final for New Japan Cup against David Finlay, and seeing that out of Shota Umino against one of the best wrestlers in New Japan today, in the leader of the Bullet Club, man, it's hard to argue against either one of them.
Yeah, and I think as well, though, I mean, you have to say it was around about this. It was the same situation last year. Tetsuya Naito as champion beats Yoda Tsuji in Ryogoku, turns around the very next Friday in Chicago and loses to Jon Moxley. There has to be, and I'm not saying it's a luck running out situation, there has to be the physical and mental toll on Hirooki Goto is going to run out at some point. And I have a feeling it's going to be sooner rather than later. But he seems to be on the up and up, especially now he's beaten David Finlay. Or is that a moment where, well, I vindicated this one thing, I vindicated this loss, and then he collapses, or does he keep going up from there? I mean, it's difficult, but I mean, it's an incredible stretch that he's had of what, you know, Nagata, Tanahashi, Finley, now Shota Umino, you know, all in the space of a couple of months. And then you've got Dontaku coming up, you've got Resurgence coming up, you would have Dominion after that. Like, it's never been harder to be an IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, and we'll see whether Hirooki Goto can keep rising to the task.
You know, this is one of those matches that I really think is going to be all mental. Both of these guys have it on the physical side. Hirooki Goto, you might give a little bit more of the edge to, but Shota Umino, that aggression has been showing out since his return in New Japan Cup. I think that the difference is going to be the mental factor here, something that we've long questioned about Shota going into the Tokyo Dome this year, and something that we rarely, if ever, question about Hirooki Goto. It's going to be a hot one. It's our main event on NJPW World Pay-Per-View, Hirooki Goto and Shota Umino.
Yep, that's the only place you can watch it. NJPW World special pay-per-view. So you don't necessarily need to have a subscription. It is a special pay-per-view presentation, so additional purchase required. But you do not need a subscription, and it's going to be worth every penny of your $19.99.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100% for sure. And in general, so before we get out here, I mean, of course, that's not to say that there's no more great events coming up on NJPW World as part of your subscription. There are a ton all the way through the rest of April, right? I mean, we've got Wrestling Red Zone coming up in Hiroshima, of course.
Yep.
We'll be in the great town of Saga later on. So, like, big events on the road to Dontaku. Road to Dontaku is going to start on Friday, April the 18th, US time. And that's going to be a special primetime start. So it's an interesting situation of a nice, easy to watch time for you guys in the US. And I'll be up bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and in Corcoran Hall at 11 o'clock in the morning, which is going to feel strange. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. There's so much to look forward to on NJPW World.
Well, Chris, this has been something to look forward to, and something that many people can look forward to going forward. I said forward a lot there. Here we go. Chris Charlton, it is indeed the return of the official New Japan Pro Wrestling podcast. Any last words?
No, I think you've done expertly.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, that's going to be it. Chris, thank you so much for joining us here today, and we will see you next time for more New Japan Pro Wrestling live on your favorite podcast platform. We're not live. We're never going to be live one of these days.
No. Well, maybe one time.
One day. Okay. All right.